Okay, good evening everyone. Those on the recording, today is the 14th of December, and the topic of tonight's shiur is the Jewish approach, or perhaps the Jewish relationship with Christmas. I want to begin with, first of all, pointing out that for today's shiur, you will hear me using the word Christmas, Jesus, and Christ. We will address in today's shiur whether one should use those words. However, one thing's for sure is that it is impossible to learn about something without having to use those words. But one shouldn't necessarily draw a conclusion from the fact that I'm using those words, that therefore one should use those words. Second introduction is that there is a lot of discussion around Christmas, which we're going to have today, which I must establish now, and I will also remind you of this probably a couple of times, that there is a lot of debate around a lot of these historical matters. Debate in the Christian world, debate in the Jewish world, debate amongst secular historians. And there isn't necessarily consensus. And I am neither an authority on a historical accuracy of this, and I'm also not an authority on the Jewish historical perspective towards it. So I will be sharing ideas that I've researched, and when I say researched, I'm talking about looking at proper academic articles that have been written and sourced, and I'm going to be quoting them as authoritative to me, but not necessarily as authoritative in themselves. In other words, I'm quoting it as saying, this is an authority that I'm trusting that authority to express a view. Not necessarily that that is the actual reality, and nor that I am saying it authoritatively. And that's very important because I'm not a historian, neither a secular historian nor a Jewish historian. And we will start a little bit by talking about some of those background ideas. And what I will do is, as I mentioned, in the absence of a source sheet, I will try and involve you more today. And as you know, sometimes, when I speak on Shabbos, that is very much a drosha in which it's a monologue. And when it comes to a shiur, it often is, I wouldn't quite call it a dialogue, but definitely there is more open for discussion and debate. And some shiurim are better, less interruption. And some shiurim are better with more interruption. And again, like I said, for today, because there is a lot of stuff that is general knowledge or experiences that you may have had, I would like your involvement should you feel comfortable. So let's start with why even discuss this topic. And I think it's very obvious. We reach that time of year where you start walking around and it's everywhere. So let's start by our first level of involvement. In what way in your own lives currently is Christmas becoming a intersection in your life, right? So 3 months ago, Christmas wasn't on the cards. Now Christmas is not far off. In what way in your personal lives right now, 2022, is your life interacting with Christmas? Okay, so Joe, would you elaborate on that?
Already in the office I work at, it's a new place. And they got the Santa Claus hats, decorations. They talk about Merry Christmas, but they also got Happy Hanukkah.
Right, so the first thing is that as you're walking around, whether it be work or even just walking around Westfield, it is the season to be jolly, right? It's all there. The red is out, the Santa Clauses are out, the sails are out, right? Everything is already in your face, trees are there, etc. All right, where else?
When you interact with people who aren't Jewish, they always say, wish Merry Christmas.
Right, so then we have the interactions person in greetings. We don't live in the shtetl. We don't live in Meir Sha'arim. We're interacting with people of different faiths, and they wish us Merry Christmas. So we may be wishing them Merry Christmas back. Right? Where else? Anyone else?
They then ask you if you celebrate it.
So then sometimes it becomes an actual discussion about whether we do or don't, and why we do and don't celebrate Christmas. Brenda, you?
The radio, the TV.
Okay, so now we go to media, specifically radio. Can you elaborate on what you're referring to?
Well, whatever you're listening to, you're hearing the music.
Ah, so that's what I wanted you to say specifically. Not just radio and news and media, but actual music. You know, there's certain songs that keep coming up, certain songs that are very, very catchy, certain songs that, as we'll find out, one of them was composed by?
Nice Jewish boy.
Right. Nice Jewish boy. What was his name? Yeah.
It's getting more teaser smart.
It's not only the songs, it's even the classical music, which I happen to like. It's inundated with the sort of Messiah and all that.
Very good.
Classical music.
Very good. So all of a sudden, music, which, you know, it's a staple of many of our lives, whether it's in the car or whether it's actually sitting down to listen to something, whether it's going to a concert. We have that, Rob. You wanted to say something?
Just all the houses in the streets with all the lights on.
Right, so we've got lights and trees and decorations and reindeer, etc. I think you can... Another one which I'm surprised hasn't come up yet, but maybe none of you work. Do none of your workplaces have a Christmas party?
There we go.
All right, so Christmas party as opposed to an end-of-year party. Yeah. Okay.
You actually have to take time off.
Okay, so often you're actually forced to take time off, right? Very good.
The other thing I learned for the first time was a thing called Kris Kringle.
That's gifts. Right, okay, very, very good. So this is what I wanted. So number one, you've got the Christmas party, that's a big one. And then you've also got the Christmas gifts. Did I hit record? Yeah, I did. And sometimes the Christmas gifts is, you must participate as part of some sort of game. Or sometimes you're the boss and it's expected that you give the gift. Or perhaps even the other way around, you may be being gifted a Christmas gift. Okay, so now that we've shown how it's interacted, just for the sake of seeing how people's minds work, what could possibly be some of the Jewish questions, the halachic questions that we could have related to any of those things? Let's turn all those interactions into actual questions. Joe?
I just can't bring myself to write to a client or somebody, Merry Christmas.
Right. Well, Joe, Joe's saying he can't bring himself to write it, right? And we'll talk later on. We'll come back to this idea of Christ. But we can make it stronger. Is one allowed to write Merry Christmas, or even, dare I say, Merry Xmas? Because Merry Xmas, ultimately, there's a separate question. We'll talk about the issue of saying Christ or not. But the point is, you're still wishing them a Merry Christmas on their festival. Good question. So, say again?
Why can't you just say season's greetings?
Yeah. Because I feel like seasonal greetings I could say if I was a card. Right? Like, if I'm a card, I can say seasonal greetings. It's not a human interaction. No, but you're coming up with solutions. We'll come back to the solutions. And before, once again, Victor's already proposing a rationale for why you would be allowed to, even though we're not there yet, but Victor's saying... there's a question of respect. Yeah. So now that's already foreboding that I may say, potentially I will, potentially I won't, that you shouldn't write Merry Christmas or wish people Merry Christmas. And then the follow-up question will automatically be, but what about respect? Or what about the issues of anti-Semitism that may come if you cause division? Or these are very good points. What else? What other questions could we have?
Like kids' exposure.
Okay, good. Elaborate.
So, like in the shopping at Westfield, there's Santa Claus. Do the young Jewish kids want to go and get?
Oh, good. So, what happens if Ariel decides that there is a person sitting there with a big beard and he's probably Jewish, and he might even be a rabbi with that kind of beard, wants to take a picture? Is it a problem? Right? Can I take? I'm not talking about what feels.
What would you do, Rabbi, if Ariel wants the picture?
Well, he recognized me in the suit, even though that was the problem. He's like, there's Daddy, I want to have a picture with Daddy. It was hard. Well, you want me to give away the answer? We're at the stage of the show, we're trying to find the questions, not the answers. Laurie, you're going to have to wait. What else?
Right, so the only thing, the interaction, we're talking about giving respect, Merry Christmas and so on.
Yeah.
Not in the non-Jewish clients who know we're Jewish, it's festive greetings, season's greetings. They know not to say Merry.
Yeah, okay, good. So that's those who are aware. Okay, what other halakha questions could there be? I want to hear questions. Like, Rabbi, question mark. So we've had,
Is Jesus mentioned anywhere in the Jewish religion?
Well, that we'll come back to. That's not necessarily a Christmas, but of course he was. He was a Jew, right? And so we'll talk about some of the origins of that. No one else got any questions?
What about you? Are you allowed to participate in singing Christmas carols?
Very good. What happens if I happen to like a particular Christmas tune? Am I allowed to listen to it on the radio? Am I allowed to sing it? Am I allowed to play it? Very good. Yeah, what else?
Can you have a Christmas tree?
Can you have a Christmas tree?
Can you give and receive gifts?
Can you give a Christmas gift? Are you allowed to receive a Christmas gift? Good.
Yeah. Can you participate in a Christmas lunch?
Very good. Yeah, no, excellent question. Even if it is kosher, it's a good question. Anything else? I think there's questions. Those are very practical questions, such as the music, etc., and parties. These are very real questions. But then we need to go as far as asking, are we allowed to say these words, and why wouldn't we? We need to look at all these things.
There are a lot of intermarriages, and what happens if you're invited to Christmas gathering? You're allowed to go, or not allowed to go?
Yeah, very good. Very, very good question. So before, and I'm sure as we go through this, we'll find other questions. But before we have any discussion, I want to look a little bit about the development of Christmas. But first, I actually want to perhaps change the tone in the room. It is a bit shocking and perhaps a little bit dramatic, and one could argue hyperbolic, but I don't know. But I want you to imagine that sometime between 1933 and 1945, the Nazi regime celebrated the 20th of April, which was Hitler's birthday, as a day of celebration. In fact, they called it Hitler Day. And on this day, people would drink, people would get drunk, and as a result of that, behave in aggressive manners. It would often lead to idolatrous practices. It would lead to abuse of minorities, specifically Jews or other, lead to torturing of those people, damaging and rioting, hooliganism. And then imagine that you could see into the future. 10 generations down, your great, 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 great grandchildren. And came the 20th of April, and they went to the shops and bought some beers and some food. And they were there, totally not on their mind. They don't remember. They never really studied about Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen. And they got together, and they were celebrating Hitler Day. Now, they're not German. They're not Nazis. They're not pro-Nazis. They're not pro-Hitler. In fact, they're not completely religiously associated, but it happens to be that Hitler Day, they get a day off work, and generally most of their friends are having a little bit of fun. Now, I can imagine you could go forward in time. What would you tell them? Say, like, yes, it's become this non-religious party. Yes, there's nothing really to it anymore. But, you know, my mother, my grandmother, my grandfather, you realize what it is that you're marking? Have a beer, but you're going to have a beer for Hitler Day? On December 25th, Christmas, 1941, who's heard of Julius Streicher? Who's Julius Streicher, the editor, or one of the editors of Der Stürmer, the anti-Semitic newspaper in Germany, wrote as follows, and I quote, obviously this is translated into English, "If one really wants to put an end to the continued prospering of this curse from heaven, that is the Jewish blood, there is only one way to do it, to eradicate this people, this Satan's son, root and branch." This is what he wrote on Christmas. Now, the reason I share this and this hypothetical of a Hitler's day that your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren would be nonchalantly celebrating is because when you look at the way we talk about Christmas now, is completely, completely separated from what Christmas represents and was. Let's look around Australia. Australia, unlike America, is not a particularly religious country. Christmas, hardly here in Australia, do you even feel the religious undertones. When you work through Westfield and you see a Santa Claus, you can find one picture of Jesus in Westfield. Right? It celebrates officially, and we'll talk about this, his birth, but is there? Yet you see Santa Claus. Of course, we don't need to go into the whole background of Santa Claus, but just in case people don't know, Santa Claus is based on a particular saint, Saint Nicholas, who was supposed to be very kind. And of course, over time, he was said to have given gifts to the poor. So that's where the idea came from, of this person giving gifts. And it connected somewhere it became very popular. I think it was in one of the Scandinavian countries. And because there were no horses, he had reindeer. And then Coca-Cola turned him, but people think Coca-Cola created Santa Claus. He didn't, but they definitely made him a little bit more jolly. They upturned the lips. He became a little bit more smiley, right? They expanded his waistline ever so slightly. And he became this character that we have now. Is there anything religious really anymore about Santa Claus? You know, most parents who are buying gifts and saying it's from Santa Claus, they don't believe in God, they don't believe in Christianity. Do you see any Christmas trees with crosses on? and out and about.
Yeah, the Christians have a bigger problem with Christmas than the Jews.
So there is a lot of... Well, we'll talk about it, but there's, there is a big discussion internally within Christianity, which is beyond today's lecture, but we'll point out two things. One, I am going to mention about the Puritans, but we'll come back to that in a second. But even we know that amongst the Christians themselves, for example, the Greek and Russian Orthodox don't celebrate Christmas on the 25th of December because they go by the older calendar and it's in January, and it becomes... They themselves have an argument. But the reality is, Christmas now has become this jolly time. And in fact, it's hard, I'll acknowledge it even myself, not to sort of get caught up in it, especially in England. Why? Because what do you think of? In England, you think of, it's not here, but in England, it's cold and there's a bit of snow and you walk through the streets of London and they've got all the lights up and it's dark and you just feel it, right? It feels festive. It feels, you know, and then Starbucks in America, they make their special flavors with the butterscotch and whatever the flavors are. It's very hard not to get caught into the culture that you live in. But if you stop and you think about it, what is Christianity? At its origin. It's okay, don't worry. Worse things have happened.
Christmas
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been worse. If, for example, if your ringtone was... if your ringtone was Jingle Bells, I would be more worried, Sarah, okay? Sarah, you reacted to that phone going off with even more stress than some people react to it when it goes off on Yom Kippur. Really, I'm okay. If we think about what Christianity is, or more specifically, who Jesus was and what he called for, was the eradication of Judaism. Now, I use the word Judaism, the eradication of Judaism. In other words, that the Torah no longer applies, that the rules of the Torah don't need to be kept anymore.
I don't think he said that.
I never said Jesus. Let me be clear. Not saying what Jesus said. What Christianity and what Jesus stands for now. Right? Jesus himself was a Jew. And later on, I mean, again, I'm not an expert on the New Testament or on the apostles. And even they don't necessarily have the same story. In other words, Christian theologians argue themselves about how to piece together the various different books to make sense of his life and who he was, etc. And some talk about him in very much historical ways and some speak about him in miraculous ways. But what the birth of Jesus and then Christianity represents, not what he did in his life, what it represents is a big a statement of Judaism as a religion is coming to an end. Whether it's the idea that the Jewish people are no longer the chosen nation, which was the view in some, and whether it was the idea that even without anti-Semitism, just that Torah doesn't apply. Now, some Christian leaders over the generations were extremely anti-Semitic, whether it was Martin Luther, as one example, I'm terrible with my dates, but then what, 1500s? And some weren't necessarily anti-Semitic against Jews as a people, but ultimately argued that Torah no longer applies. In other words, yes, we can get lost in the Christmas carols. If you stop, and that's why I use this analogy of Hitler Day, right? You go, what Christmas representing? What does Christianity represent? And with this, we can also go a little bit deeper. It's interesting that nowadays, I've never feared for my life from Christian oppression, the generation that I've lived in. Victor, if you were to ask your mom, Genia, who lived in Poland, how she felt in terms of safety around some of her Polish Christian neighbors, might have been a different story. But
I think Easter was worse.
Yes.
I'm not talking about the time, just about the people, right? Yeah. So when these festivals came up, there was genuine fear. And in fact, if we go back even before that, who was friendlier to the Jews? The Muslims or the Christians?
The Muslims.
No, definitely not. The Almohads, for example. But there were periods in history where the Muslims were far more tolerant of Judaism. Hence the reason why, as we're going to see, some of the customs that take place and that live in Ashkenazic Jewry don't live in Sephardic Jewry. Why? Because the Sephardim lived amongst Muslims and the Ashkenazim lived in Europe, in Christian Europe. The pogroms, the blood libels. Now, it's a far cry from today where I grew up. I was often terrified for my life. I lived in a very high Muslim area and was repeatedly on a daily basis shouted at from cars about being Jewish, etc. But whilst we might live with that, and we live in a world now where the Christian faith is on the whole very kind towards Jews, but it wasn't always like this. And history shows that. So when we think of Christmas and we just go, oh yeah, it's a, you know, the Christmas tree's on, I love that Christmas song, right? Trying to imagine what those who lived through pogroms, and it's important to point out that many times those pogroms in particular took place when? On the 25th of December. I'll give you one example. The Catholic Church in 1466, Pope Paul II, for the amusement of his Roman citizens, forced Jews to race naked through the streets of the city. An eyewitness account reports, before they were to run, the Jews were ritually fed so as to make the race more difficult for them, and at the same time more amusing for spectators. They ran amid Rome's taunting shrieks and peals of laughter, while the Holy Father stood upon a richly ornamented balcony and laughed heartily. On December 25th, 1881, Christian leaders whipped the Polish masses into anti-Semitic frenzies that led to riots across the country. In Warsaw, 12 Jews were brutally murdered, huge numbers maimed, and many Jewish women were raped. 2 million rubles worth of property was destroyed. Now, again, I'm quoting this from historical sources. Are these historically debated events? Possibly. But these would be, if they are completely accurate, two examples of if you could imagine going back and finding those Jews in Warsaw who some of their relatives were raped and some of the relatives were killed and their shops were burnt down. And they saw how we walk through Westfield going, oh, this, I love this Christmas song. And, do you know, I really love it at this time of the year. You know, it's just the smell of the gingerbread men or, you know, imagine them, what they would think. They would be inside the same way you would feel if I said to you, oh, I'm just celebrating Hitler Day today. You know, a little bit of Kristallnacht fever, right? You'd be like, what's wrong with you? How could you be so cold? And yet, because of societally what's happened to Christmas, we seem to find that happening nowadays. And I think it's important at this point actually to just briefly give some examples of the Christianity that the Ashkenazim lived in. For example, some of you are saying Kaddish, and some of you have said Kaddish. Have any of you said Kaddish in Israel when you were there? Mm-hmm. Yeah? That would be one example. But I remember when Stephen Jankelowitz went to Israel just after Brenda passed, he mentioned to me that him and the boys, they kept getting stuck on the words Vayatzmach Purkanei V'karev Meshichei. So, some of you might hear in our shul as well, some people who say a little bit of a different Kaddish, and it goes, Yitkadav Yitkadash Shemei Rabbah, that's the same, Bama Devarach Rutev Amlich Machutei, it's the same, and then instead of saying Bechayechon, they say Vayatzmach Purkanei V'karev Meshichei. So I said to him, no, you must have been in a Sephardi shul. He goes, no, I wasn't. So I looked into it. And it turns out that in Israel, even Ashkenazim say that line, unless they have an Anglo shul. Well, why was that line not in our Siddurim? What does V'yatzmach purkanei v'karev Meshichei mean? That the redemption should sprout and the Messiah should be coming. This was removed in Europe because this would imply that the Messiah had not yet come, which would be against Christian theology, that Jesus had come and he was the Messiah. So how could you say those words and pray for the coming? And this, amongst other passages, including some in Aleinu L'Shabeach, have been removed over years, because of sometimes they would have been removed by the Christian people, censors themselves, and sometimes perhaps Jews would have self-censored to avoid any issue of conflict, pogroms, and anti-Semitism. This was the world. Well, Sephardim never had that problem, because the Muslims never viewed, they view Muhammad as a prophet, but never as the Messiah. So you can see that whilst we live, I've never walked past a church and received any abuse. For hundreds of years, people died and were killed because of the foundational anti-Semitism that lived within the church. So that's, I think, an important part to keep in mind when we're talking about Christmas. Let's move on to the second section. We actually do need to talk a little bit about what the origins of Christmas are. So if I said to you, what does Christmas celebrate? or what does Christmas commemorate, what would you say? The birth of Jesus. Now here's the issue. Nowhere in any book, not historical nor Christian Bible, does it tell us when he was born. Well, the New Testament doesn't say when he was born. So where does this idea come that he was born on the 25th? So some scholars want to suggest that there's a verse in the New Testament that talks about there were lots of sheep in the field, so they start working out when the shepherds would have had the sheep in the field, and it works out around December. Some suggest that it's got to do with the winter solstice. I'll just explain, just in case we don't know, what are the two solstices. We have winter and summer. In the northern hemisphere, the winter solstice is on the 21st or around, it's not always the same day, but around the 21st of December. For those who want to know exactly what that is, if you imagine here is the sun and here is the earth, okay, and the earth is not on a perfect, is tilted on an axis, right? The winter solstice is when the north pole and the northern hemisphere has the least amount of light, okay? So therefore, would it come to the shortest day? Okay, the shortest day is the winter solstice. And straight after the winter solstice, the days start getting longer. Obviously, it's still winter, but they start getting longer and longer. Some want to suggest that the reason why Christmas was placed as the 25th of December is because it coincides with the winter solstice. And whilst we do not know the birth date of Jesus, the idea of what happens at the turn of the winter solstice is more light is coming into the world. Right, so they viewed that the birth of Jesus was sort of the heavenly light of God coming into the world at his birth. And because we don't know what date he's born, it would be an appropriate time at the winter solstice to say this is when we should celebrate him coming in. That's one theory. I want to share another theory which seems to be quite predominant in historical thought. And it goes back to the winter solstice again. The winter solstice was known already for a long time. They were able to calculate themselves when the shortest days were. And already then, in Roman times, there was a celebration. And again, without getting too bogged down into Roman history, we tend to, people who, if you've never studied or read about this, you would assume that, Christianity and the Romans, they go together. We were Roman Catholic, right? The Vatican is in Rome. But of course, we know that wasn't like that. And at the beginning, the Romans were extremely persecuting, okay, Christians or the new Christians. Of course, I'm not just talking about the fact that they sentenced Jesus to death, but just in general, their approach to it. Now, already it was a bit later that what happened was when they started to see how much of an influence it was having on society, where they adopted it as the religion of the Roman Empire. Better that which you can control. If you can't beat them, join them kind of thing. Well, at least we can control it. So a lot of, in early Roman periods, it wasn't like that. And there was a festival related to the winter solstice known as Saturnalia, if I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Saturnalia. And it was named after the Roman god Saturn, the god of agriculture. And there was this festival that took place, and this is where I don't seem to be clear. Some say it was on December 17th. Now, some say it ran as over time. It grew this festival to be until December 23rd, and some say it was a full week, the 25th. But no doubt that around this time was this pagan festival. And, for example, the ancient Greek poet and historian Lucian describes that they would do human sacrifice, intoxication, going house to house, singing naked, rape, consuming human-shaped biscuits, even, which may be where gingerbread men came from. And this was a pagan festival. And in the 4th century, Christianity, they argue, realized that if they want to be able to control these pagans, if they want to bring them along in the journey, now that they had adopted Christianity, they would need to sort of give in a little bit. Like, you can't take everything away. Like, imagine someone said to you, "Look, we want you Jews to join our society, and you can't do any of the fun stuff." So, we want you to convert, but we'll let you have Hanukkah and Simchas Torah. Okay, it's more appealing, right? But, you got rid of Pesach, I'm okay with that. Yom Kippur, as long as you keep Hanukkah, give me Purim and throw in a Kiddush, right? So now maybe I'm more interested, right? So in order to attract these pagans, they said, well, we want them to give up their pagan worship and we want them to become part of the Christian faith. Well, hold on, we can't just get rid of Saturnalia. Let's sort of evolve it. And so it became appropriate that we would then say, you know what, let's celebrate the birth of Jesus on the 25th of December. In fact, because of the pagan origins of Christmas, according to this theory, the Puritans, who were a group of Christians in America, made the observance of Christmas illegal in Massachusetts between 1659 and 1681. Right? So this is what you were mentioning, Dave, that even amongst Christian theologians and religious teachings, there is this debate about Christmas, because some of them are very, very uncomfortable with the fact that it may indeed have originated from a pagan festival, which was then transposed, so to speak, and was like, okay, now we're going to celebrate it as the birth of Jesus. Yes?
So I was teaching a group of Jewish kids at a government school years ago, and a teacher came into my class, and she said, I'm Christian, and I just want to let you know that Christmas, you know, is on the 25th of December, but it's because you know, we copied you. Because, you know, Hanukkah's on the 25th of Kislev, and so we put, Jesus really wasn't born on the 25th of December, but said, and you know, the lights that we have on our Christmas tree, you know, that's because of your, festival lights, because of your,
So I don't...
Hanukkah menorah. So, I know, she came into the class and just said this to me, and I must admit, I never even thought of it. Like,
so, I'm, as I said, I'm no authority on this, but I have done a fair bit of research, and nowhere have I seen in academic, Christian, or Jewish thought that Christmas is a copy of Hanukkah.
Not a copy, but the date.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. I have not seen. Right. I've not seen in Jewish history, in Christian history, or in secular history, any suggestion that the date of Christmas was based around the fact that Hanukkah was on the 25th of Kislev.
She said that they were used to celebrating at that time of the year, and so not to like change it. So they were used to doing that, so that it was easier to just.
I can't say more other than I've never seen such a thing. Is there possible truth to it? Yeah, I'm not, again, like I said, I'm not the authority, but I've never, in my research, which I did, which is a fair bit, I did not see this anywhere suggested. It sounds more like something she may have been told and therefore shared with a certain sense of authority. Even, for example, the lights on the trees, I'm now trying to remember where because I didn't spend too much time in this, has an origin within one of the, might have been St. Nicholas himself. Or
not the star that they followed.
I can't remember what it was. There was some sort of theory that it might have been one of the saints, put one of the leaders lit candles. I don't know. So I won't suggest what I don't know, but I've never heard that. Okay, so now that we've got the background of Christmas, and we focused on two things. Number one, we focused on the idea that really, as Jews, we should probably be a little bit more respectful and somber about the history of Christmas. And the history of the relationship of Jews and Christians, whilst we celebrate the fact that we live in a time of peace with our Christian neighbors, we've got to be a little bit more somber and respectful towards generations who lived through pogroms. Like we would, cringe if someone was to celebrate any sort of Hitler Day or anything else like that. And then the second thing is we looked a little bit at the origins of Christmas. So now let's move on to some of the questions. With that background... So, there's a rabbi who I was listening to, and he said he got a question. And the question he was asked was as follows, that there was someone in the community who was unemployed, and he was looking for some money, and needed to make some money. It happened to be the right height, and happened to be slightly horizontally advantaged, carried a nice curve on him, and also in the right age. And he wanted to know, it's a perfect opportunity to apply to be a mall Santa and to make some money. Would this be permitted to him as a Jew? Other questions that I've heard asked like this, practical questions, were there was one rabbi who said that he was once giving a shiur, and one of the boys asked, he says that in his town, there was this guy who was very, very wealthy, and every year he put up this huge thing in his front garden, this Santa, but it was also jumping castles and food, and it became this whole parade that a lot of these Jewish kids used to come. So he knew this Jewish boy, said to him, I'll give you $50, can you go out there and buy some kosher hot dogs and buy... you know, some kosher treats, because all the Jews come. I want to be accepting. So he asked this boy, "Can you go buy me some kosher food?" And this boy wants to know, what should he do? Should he go buy kosher food for the Jewish kids who rock up at Santa? You might say, well, the other option is then they end up eating the non kosher food. Better they eat kosher food. The flip side is, you know, should he partake in this? So when we come to these questions, you've got to look at how do you answer these questions. You know, we raised some others at the beginning. Okay, so Christmas presents, right? So should you give a Christmas? Should you go to a Christmas party? Even if it's kosher, if they provide you with a kosher meal, should you go? So the first thing is you can't say yes or no black and white. The first thing you have to do is explore why. See, if we're answering this emotionally, you might say, well, after what you just said about Hitler Day, that's it. I'm never going to another Christmas party ever again in my life. But what about halachically? Let's remove the emotional side of it. And let's just talk halachically. What could be the problem? So I'm going to ask you. Can you guys think? What it's could be the problem?
From what you've been telling us.
Say again?
It's pagan from what okay. you've been telling
us. So the first thing that Laurie says is it's pagan. Okay, so elaborate. What would be the problem?
Well, it goes all the way back to Saturn, as you said.
Correct. So what would be the problem with that?
Well, we'd like not to behave in a pagan fashion.
Okay, but why? That's what I want to hear. In other words, why don't we want to behave with pagan? Because idolatry.
It's idolatry.
Right? Now, to be clear, the laws related to idolatry are not as plain and simple as the second commandment, you know, don't have any other gods. Do any of you know any of the other laws related to idolatry? Not just don't serve.
Kind of anything made in the image of.
Don't have things made in the image. What else? You're not allowed to swear. You're not allowed to benefit. You're not allowed to take an oath in idolatry. You're not allowed to benefit from idolatry in any way. You have an obligation to destroy idols. You have an obligation to, if the Jewish people were running the land of Israel and there were idolaters in the land of Israel, not like now, but in temple times, to drive those idolaters out of the land, to not let them live in Israel. If there were Jews who served idols, they were put to death. You were not allowed to benefit from the loot of a city that was an idolatrous city, complicated law, the Ir HaNidachat, the city that had overwhelmingly become idol worshippers. You're not allowed to benefit in any way. So, for example, this could still apply practically today. If you were, you had a friend who was a practicing Hindu, and Hinduism is clear idolatry, clear avodah zarah, okay? Right? There is no doubt that it halakhically considers avodah zarah. And they brought you something that was used in their service. I don't know, they brought you flowers, beautiful flowers. Yeah, so this was a famous thing that happened a while ago. It turns out it was a load of nonsense. That was a conclusion. But there was a whole period where everyone was chucking out their shaitels because they came from India and they thought the hair was being used, right? So the joke was is that we know that the three cardinal sins, one of them is idolatry, one of them is adultery. What's the third one? What's the third cardinal sin?
Not paying your shulfies.
That's a meta sin. Right? No, come on. Don't commit adultery. Don't serve idolatry. What's the other sin that... But what I mean by cardinal sins are the sins that you must give up your life before committing. No, so in other words, someone puts a gun to your head and says, break Shabbat. Do you need to break Shabbat?
Yes.
You're allowed to break Shabbat, and you even should. What's the third one?
Interesting.
That... Okay, so I need a bit of background because I'm going to explain, but I need a background because people are lost. There are three sins that you must give up your life before committing. Okay, they're called the three cardinal sins in Hebrew. Yareg vali avor, be killed and do not transgress. One of them is don't commit adultery, idolatry. Daniel brings up something else. There is a separate concept that giving up your religion, but that interestingly isn't really a sin of itself. There is no sin, don't give up your religion. That would involve all the sins, and that is right, that one's supposed to give up their life before doing something like that. But as a particular mitzvah, it's murder. Right? And in Hebrew, the term for murder, in that expression, correct, but in there it's not called that. It's called shfichut damim. What does shfichut damim mean?
Spilling of blood.
Shfichut, spilling, damim, blood. However, damim also in Mishnaic terminology can mean money. So there was this whole joke at the time where everyone was throwing out the $10,000 shekels because they're worried about one of the cardinal sins of idolatry, they're ending up violating the other cardinal sin of shvichut damim, throwing away their money. There was this whole thing. I remember it was when I was a kid, everyone was going crazy about it. Why? Because you're not allowed to benefit from idolatry. If you had a Hindu friend who brought you some flowers that had been left at the temple that they were offering, and they were saying, you know what, these flowers are going to go to the bin, you would not be allowed to use them. You'd not be allowed them in your house. And not just that, you would not be allowed to even give them away. You would have to grind them up and destroy them. Right? Idolatry is a big deal. For us, it's not such a big deal because we don't really live in an idolatrous world. But idolatry is a massive thing. Now, Laurie says, well, the problem is idolatry because it originates in pagan. Okay, but you could counter that by saying, who cares how it originated? But what is it now?
The same with Christmas.
Okay, so
the origins of it. Ah, and what it means today.
Ah, so that's the question. That's the point. So the first question we need to look at is, this is the first question we need to look at. Ignoring the emotional side of what it meant in history, is do we care about what Christmas is now or what it was? That's number one. But the truth is Christmas completely divorced from religion? Depends who you ask.
Christmas parties, people just use that time of the year.
Correct.
As an end of year celebration.
It depends where. Yeah. It depends where. Go to America and you have a very different world. America is a far more Christian country than Australia is. And obviously it depends where. But if you go perhaps to some of the southern states, right, where Christianity, they believe it. I'm not saying they believe Jesus was born on that day, but they celebrate it as the birth of Jesus. It is a religious festival. Right? They go to mass. No, but the fact is, even here in Australia, let's ignore the people who go to the parties. On Christmas Eve, you go around, all the churches here will be full. Right? They will have Christmas Eve mass. And whether it's the Australians or it's the Croatians, it will be. So then raises another question. So I'm going to have two questions. Does it matter the origins or not? Okay. So for example...
Depends if you classify Christianity as the word of
Zoro. Ah, I'm getting to there, one second. But before we even get there, the truth is that it's going to become a very important point. A Jew who has an idol, that idol, so say I fashioned for myself a little statue and I put it in my office and every morning I prayed and I used this as an idol, right? Well, that idol must be destroyed and can never be cancelled. What happens if after a year of doing it, I repented my ways, and I said, I no longer believe in it. What must I do with that statue? Still destroy it. However, a non-Jew who fashions an idol for themselves, one must destroy it. However, it can be cancelled if the person who created it declares that they no longer believe in it. In other words, there is a difference between Jews and non-Jews. A Jew who participates in idolatry, their idol must be completely destroyed no matter what. Whereas non-Jews can cancel the idol. Now, what does that mean? That how we interact with idolatry is in some way dependent on whether they believe in it. So yes, you're right, Laurie, that it goes back to pagan, which was clearly idolatry. But the average person who keeps Christmas now doesn't do it from a religious. And even those who do, it's Christian religion and not pagan idolatry. So does it really matter? So yes, once upon a time it was Saturnalia. Okay, but it's not now. Which then raises an interesting question that David brings up. Is Christianity considered idolatry? Right, what would you say? Yeah. Daniel, you say yes because?
We've got images of the cross, of Jesus, and
so they believe in the Trinity. The God, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost, right? So I've got to tell you that it's not so simple. That there is a big debate within Judaism about whether Christianity is considered idolatry, because they still do believe in God. Like Muslims, like Christians, they do believe in the one God. However, they believe in something that is known in halachic terminology as shituf. What is shituf? Very good, is like a partnership. That there is the one God, but that somehow God is also employed a secretary and an assistant. Okay? The dual, very good. And the question is, we say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. God is one. And there is a mitzvah known as Yichud Hashem, which is the idea that God is one and not made up of multiple parts. In other words, is it idolatry if you say, you know, there is only one God, but then also God made the heaven into a God, right? In other words, God has, you know, when God wants to take a day off, we all need a day off. Right? God's got a hard job, he wants to take a day off, so he has this God and that God. And that is the concept of Shittuf, and there is a massive debate in general about whether non-Jews are required to believe, to not believe in Shittuf. In other words, one of the seven Noahide laws is not to believe, not to serve idols. However, there is a debate as to whether for non-Jews, we know as Jews, we have to believe in one God and only one God and no partners. There is a debate whether non-Jews, are they allowed to believe in partnerships gods? Not that, so that's still one God. So it's clear that Islam is a completely monotheistic religion. But Christianity is a little bit of a different kettle of fish. This is a long-standing argument which we're not going to conclude today. I'm just going to say that there are two views. There are those who view Christianity as idolatry and those who say, no, Christianity is not idolatry. Okay? Now, therefore, it becomes further. When it comes to Christmas, the fact that it's a Christian who believes in it, is that necessarily idolatry or not? It's not so clear. But obviously, it is raises a very big question. Yes, Hap?
So, Hashem has, when he needs his day off, he's got the angels, and he sends them on missions.
Okay, so,
is that not almost like a partnership?
Okay, so very good. So today's shiur, okay, very good question. Today's shiur is not about that, so I don't want to delve too deeply into that. The whole concept of angels, though, remember, angels are not physical beings, right? There isn't this idea that there are these angels who sort of live on some sort of equal measure to God. It's the way that God communicates with the world and humanity, right? As opposed to that Jesus was a human being who was God in the living flesh, which is complete antithesis of Judaism and heretical to Judaism. How we understand what it means, angels, to be very careful. In fact, it is completely, utterly, and totally forbidden to pray to angels. Okay? Unlike praying to Jesus in Christian thought, which is, yeah, you pray to Jesus. That's, and again, I'm no expert on the Trinity and the different views, but anyway, there is some sort of partnership there. So therefore, how we view it, do we view it as full idolatry, semi-idolatry, is not 100% clear. Now, okay, so that could be one issue in engaging with Christmas things. But there's actually something else as well. There is a mitzvah known as Chukot Hagoy. Now, Chukot Hagoy. And I want to explain, by the way, in general, the term Goy has become, amongst non-Jewish people, to be a derogatory term. And it doesn't really make any sense, because Goy just means nation. And interestingly, a term which I've now heard from multiple people, non-Jewish women who sort of know about Judaism, they go, ah, I'm a Shiksa. And apparently, it's, you know, they don't even view it as offensive. And I always say, like, if only you knew, you know, shiksa comes from the Hebrew word shaketz, which means despicable, repulsive, right? So when you talk about that's why I refuse. I try not to people use it, and I, because they've been using it for years, and I try not to make them feel too bad. But you shouldn't use the term shiksa. It's really not a nice term. But the term goy, there's nothing wrong with it. Goy means nation. In other words, one of the other nations of the world. So when we use it in a shiur, we have to use the word goy. It's all over Gemara. It's all over Shulchan Aruch. Remember, one of the teachers at Keset Torah got offended because she was substituting a class and they were learning Gemara and the word kept coming up about goy. And she couldn't believe it that they were just using this racist term. And I had to explain to her that it's not a racist term. It's used in Jewish law constantly. Okay, what is the mitzvah of Chukot Hagoy? Chukot Hagoy is that we do not go in the ways of non-Jews. Now, this in itself is very, very complicated, because what does that mean? So you look at, in Shulchan Aruch, you look at Maimonides, some of the definitions are as follows. We should not wear clothes which are fitting for them or have haircuts that they did. We shouldn't build buildings that look like their buildings of worship. We should be different in the way we behave and act. And in the words of Maimonides, just like we think differently, this should be reflected externally. Now, what does this mean? Does that mean that because the French like fries, we can't eat French fries? Now, what does that mean? Because Australians like to put an egg in their burger or a beetroot in the pineapple in their burger, we can't put a beetroot? No, it doesn't mean that. It's got to do with things that are there, and the word we're going to use is pritzut. Now, often, pritzut is the antonym of tzniut. Now, I want to just explain these two terms. They're often misused. Sniut, who's heard the term sniut or sneers? Often translated as modesty, but they're more often than not used as a way of discussing someone's dress code, and generally in terms of sexuality of the clothing. And therefore, it's often targeted at girls and saying, you know, you can't wear that skirt, it's not sniut. That's not what sniut means, and it's not what pritzut means. Sniut, hatznelechet, the verse says. Walk around with a certain sense of discreetness. So, for example, you want to understand what sniut is? Okay. Kate, Princess Kate, would be a good example of sniut. I'm not talking about whether all her dresses cover her elbow. Right? I'm talking about her way. You would never see a royal chew gum in public. You would never hear a royal swear. These are things which are not sniut. Now, again, colloquially, it's become to mean other things. What is pritzut? It's the opposite of that. Pritzut, thankfully there's no video. I'll show you what pritzut is, because this takes me back to my youth. So I grew up in East London. In East London, you were either Indian heritage, Muslim heritage, or you were an Essex boy or girl, okay? And they had a particular yobbo walk. Yeah. They used to call it bowling. You don't know what bowling is? Bowling is you've got to walk like this. And when you walk past, you go, what you looking at, Drew Bag? Right? And the way you talk, shoulders out like this. It's this whole arrogance and demeanor. And that is pritzut. Pritzut is the opposite of discreetness. It's look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. Okay? And this applies to men and women equally, even though you often hear it referred to as women's dress. When we say you cannot dress or get haircuts, chukot hagoyim, in the ways of the non-Jews, that because we think differently, we must act differently, it doesn't refer to things they happen to do. It refers to things that they do either for no reason. In other words, a coat. They wear a particular kind of coat, let's say. If I was wearing it in the winter, then it's clear I'm wearing it because I'm cold. Wouldn't be an issue. If I'm wearing it in the summer, then why are you wearing it? The only reason you're wearing it is to be like them. That would be an issue. Or something that they did for pritzut, something that they did to make a statement. Often the color red is thrown around, right? It's an interesting discussion which we'll get into today. Psychologists and evolutionary psychologists specifically talk about red and the impact that the color red has on our sexual temptations, etc. But often red was used also, whether it was to represent blood or whatever it was, and often you see certain laws in certain times in Jewish history that say, you know, don't wear those things. You shouldn't wear the color red, etc., because of what it represented. But a good way, an example to look at it now, was a particular haircut that became, so for example, not that it's very in style today, but you know the olden day, the priest haircut that they used to have? The
friar tuck.
Yeah, well, it's called the friar tuck, yeah? You know, that would be clearly something that you shouldn't be getting. Now, it happens to be your hair grew in that way, and that was the neatest way to cut up your hair, it was fine. So, why is this relevant? Because as soon as you come to Christmas, before you get to the question of idolatry, the first question you've got is, this violates the concept of chukot hagoy. Right? If everyone around Christmas is starting to put up lights outside, if everyone around Christmas is starting to dress a certain way, then there may indeed be a problem of chukot hagoy. Here's, before I get to the idolatry question, just the simple matter that we are doing things specifically to be like them. Why should we do things specifically to be like them? But then it becomes even more problematic. And that is the question of this idolatry. Because when it comes to idolatry, not just are we not allowed to participate as idol worshippers or even benefit, it even says that one isn't supposed to mention the names of their idols. One isn't supposed to do anything that would honor their idols. Even so much as in some places saying that we should do things that mock their idols, that bring disgrace to their idols. Now, I'm going to get to the question in a moment of anti-Semitism and enmity and peaceful relations with your neighbors. But just to keep that in mind, how harsh this concept is. So much so that it is a clear halacha, clear, that you cannot greet a non-Jew on their day of their festival with the festive greeting. Now, this is talking about idolatry. So, for example, I don't know the Hindu festivals, but if there was a Hindu festival and your neighbor was a Hindu, you would not be allowed to greet him with that. It's absolutely clear. Now, with that in mind, comes a question. And writing Merry Xmas, whilst it may save you writing the word Christ, which you may or may be able to say, maybe not till say I'm going to come to that, doesn't change the fact that you're greeting them with that greeting. Now, that doesn't mean that that's the end of the matter. I've got to continue to explore this.
If it's idolatry.
Right?
If it's idolatry.
But the interesting thing is that for Jews, it's definitely considered idolatry. In other words, the question is whether it's an idolatry for them. For us, it's definitely idolatry. For a Jew to celebrate Christmas as a religious way, it's definitely idolatry. For us. For them, maybe not. However, the flip side is, do we go based, what about if all the people at our work don't care about Christmas? Let's say I have a workplace of complete atheists. I don't care about Christmas. Nevertheless, it is clear in halacha that we should be careful with these things.
If someone says to you, Merry Christmas, can you say, you too?
So we're going to come to the solutions. We're going to come to the solutions. But before we come to the actual solutions, we have to remember the opposite side. If you, as an employer, are working in Australia, and the expectation is that you give gifts, then not giving gifts could cause a lot of problems. Okay? If you're not going to wish your neighbor a Merry Christmas, it could cause a lot of problems. What about songs? Singing the songs. Again, if the song was composed specifically for the Christians with references to Jesus, etc., that would be a problem. Now, nowadays, there are many Christmas songs that you could make an argument that, yes, the song references Christmas. But what Christmas does it reference? A very secular Christmas. In other words, ignore the pagan origins of Christmas for a second. We've moved past that. We've got Christmas 1, which is a Christian festival, which is maybe idolatry, maybe not. But then you have Christmas 2, which has nothing to do with Christianity. You've got all these people who celebrate Christmas, they don't believe in anything. Right? Whether it's been commercialized, in whatever way it is. Nevertheless, because many of the people do, one is supposed to be careful. Now, we could already say that there would be a difference between a practicing Catholic, let's say, and an atheist who happens to give you a Christmas present. Right? You could draw a difference. But overall, one is supposed to try to be careful with these things. People might be offended. Here's the answer. There's solutions to everything. So, for example, let's make it a bit practical. Let's say you're a boss and you needed to give your employer a Christmas present. Don't give it on Christmas. Give it a week before. In your head, it's, they're going to think it's Christmas. Fine. At least you didn't give them a Christmas present. Okay. Do you really need to say Merry Christmas? Nowadays, anyway, there's so many different ways. Happy Holidays. Seasonal greetings sounds a bit odd, but you could say that. Right? Wishing you, right? Happy New Year. You know, at this point, they're so interchanged, Christmas and New Year. Happy New Year. And some have a stricter view. In other words, in fact, I've even heard some of the view that if a Christian who believed in Jesus, believed in Christmas, came to you and gave you a Christmas present, that you shouldn't take it. And if you have to take it because of, you know, you don't want to cause a fight, you should take it and get rid of it. You shouldn't keep it. Go as far as that. I think that it would be very fair to say that you should not go to a Christmas party unless you have to. And if you have to, you should not eat. And you should not partake. There is even... Now, you will have a counter-argument that if it's like a business party, which is just an end-of-year party, right? Yeah. So then it's an end-of-year party. It happens to coincide with a lot of people to Christmas. But if it's specifically a Christmas party, if you are invited to a Christmas party, you should do everything you can not to partake. Now, James, you raised, what about in mixed families? Yeah, and that's where you have to keep in mind. Shalom. And in fact, so much so, the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, was much more lenient with this. Now, the answer of why he was more lenient with this is historic. He lived in the 1500s in Poland, right? Can you imagine what it would have meant? So they were much more, you know, just do what it takes to keep the peace. You're talking about, you know, you're not going to show up to the Christmas party. There's going to be a pogrom the next day. Now, nowadays, we don't live like that. You cannot show up to a Christmas party. Nothing's going to happen. And if you feel, you know, it's going to be looked on badly in your work, so go. Do you have to eat and drink at the party? Now, again, I'm not talking about an end-of-year party. I'm talking about specifically you're invited to a Christmas party. So all these, let's finish off with some of the other questions that we spoke about in terms of, I mentioned using the words Jesus and Christmas and Christ, etc. There are those who say you shouldn't say Christmas because it includes the word Christ. And then there are others who say, no, the word Christmas is, whilst it has etymologically connected to Christ, it's its own word and it refers to their festival. There's no problem saying the word Christmas. Some people say, no, you shouldn't say Christmas, and that's where words like Kratzmach or Xmas and all these things came up. Okay, what about saying Jesus? So there are those who have the view, I'm talking about significant authorities, who say, why can't you say Jesus? In Hebrew, Jesus was Yeshua. He's mentioned multiple times in the Talmud, to answer your question, Kevin.
But
so if I can say...
That particular Jesus is mentioned, yes.
Yes, Yeshua, right?
Is it Yeshua or Yeshua?
In the way it was always, the way you always read it in Jewish thought is Yeshua. And I have seen in Christian sort of runners they use the word Yeshua, but I was always taught it as Yeshua. So that was always so some say you can, if you can say Jesus, you can say Yeshua. What was the problem? And some say, no, you shouldn't say his name because you're not supposed to say the name of an idol. And for him, he's an idol. What about Christ? Well, that's far more problematic than Jesus. Why?
Because it means the Messiah.
Right? So again, I've heard that some views who say that saying Christ on its own isn't such a problem. But one thing you definitely shouldn't say is Jesus Christ. Right? Putting the two together, because then you're saying him and you're saying he's the Messiah. Right? The word Christ wasn't his last name. It wasn't Jesus, Mr. Christ. Right? You know, when they sent him his mail, I'm on a first name basis with him, Jesus, you're not a father, you're calling Christ. No, Christ means Mashiach. So calling him the Mashiach would be a massive, massive problem. So that's why as a result you'll find that most people, you know, were growing up, we used to call him Yoshka and such things. I generally, whilst I try, and especially in shul, not to just say Jesus, etc., there's definitely a bigger problem. I generally avoid saying the word Christ. I don't generally avoid saying the word Jesus. I look at it as more as a historical figure. That's who he was. And I personally don't say Christmas. But there are those who say you shouldn't. Now, I thought I'd go short and I haven't. But with your permission, I realized I'd prepared a whole nother topic within this that I haven't given yet. So what I'm going to do, though, because if people are ants in their pants, they're going to leave. And I'll actually pause the recording.
Is he mentioned as a rabbi or anything?
No, he's mentioned in very negative terms, but he's mentioned as a student of one of the rabbis. He was a student of Ben Parachia. I have it written down here, sorry. He was a student of, was it Rabbi Shaw? Yeah, Rabbi Shaw Ben Parachia. Okay, so then let's carry. If you will indulge me another 5 minutes, I realize there's a whole other thing I prepared, but I forgot about it. And that is, have any of you heard of the custom of Nittelnacht?
Not to learn
yet. But before you say what it is, how many of you, just show of hands, if you heard of the Nittelnacht? Nittelnacht is the idea that on the 24th of December in the evening, there is a custom not to study Torah in the first half of that evening. Where does this come from? Okay, so first of all, let's talk about the etymology of the word Nittel. Okay, most likely, Nittel comes from the word nativity, right? Native. It's the Latin origin for the word for?
Birth.
To be born. What other words do we have in English that are related to it? Prenatal, postnatal, right? Okay, so therefore, Nittel would be the birth. But it seems that even already hundreds of years ago, there was this discussion of the origins of this word, and some said no, some said Nittel, they spelt it with a tet, and they said it came from the word nutal, taken, and that, you know, Jesus had been taken from the world. And some spell it with a taf, and say it comes with nitle, hung, because Jesus was hung. Right? So whichever one it is, there is this night that's become known as Nittelnacht. So where does this custom come from not to study? Okay, and there are many different suggestions. The first question is, why don't we know exactly where this custom came from? There's lots of customs in Judaism, and the truth is a lot of them we don't know where they came from. Why specifically this one? Is it so much? And the answer is Christian censorship. Now, whether it was self-censorship or Christian censorship, there was any writings that were perceived to be critical of the church were often burnt, destroyed, etc. So, therefore, there's a lot of lack of knowledge. But somehow the custom is very, very well known and passed down from generation to generation not to learn. What's the reason for this?
Yeah? I don't think that maybe it's unsafe that night to go out in the street.
So one of the most simple, obvious reasons is a reason that is logical and also is expressed in Judaism in other contexts. We learned recently about Hanukkah, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this in Shul one of the days, but the Gemara clearly says that you're supposed to light the candle of Hanukkah outside on the street, and then it says that if you can't light it by your window, and then it says if it's a time of danger, you should light it on the table. So it's, what time of danger? Rashi there on the Talmud explains that there was a certain Persian festival where nobody was allowed to have any lights kindled, except in their house of worship. And therefore, if they would have seen the Jews lighting candles, it would have led to punishment. So therefore, they have to discreetly light on the table, not light it in public. So this idea that on certain festival days, Jews would not have been able to light candles would have been a problem. And of course, to study Torah, you had to light a candle. So therefore, it became that you don't study. That was one thing. Others suggest that it was a sign of mourning. Of course, what other day of the year do we not study? Tisha B'Av, we're mourning. Sign of mourning, you don't study Torah as something that gives you pleasure, and therefore something that gives you pleasure you don't do on a day of mourning. Can anyone think of a logical problem with this reason? Why does it only apply the first part of the night? It should apply the whole day, if it's mourning. And secondly, on Tisha B'Av, whilst you're not allowed to learn, because it's a day of mourning, you're allowed to learn any of the laws related to Avelut, mourning. So if you wanted to have a study session on Tisha B'Av about the laws of mourning, you would be allowed to. But on Nitzelnacht, on Christmas Eve, all those things, anything related to the destruction of the temple, you could study on the 9th of Av. But on Nitzelnacht, the night before Christmas, no, you don't study anything. So that seems unlikely. Yes?
But on Tisha B'Av, we always learn...
But we learn things related to Tisha B'Av. That's the whole thing. We learn the lamentations. And that's the whole argument. If the reason why we didn't study on the 24th of December in the evening was because it's a sign of mourning, then the question is, why would we not be allowed to learn the laws of mourning like we are on Tisha B'Av? Right? So therefore it's possible. So that for that reason doesn't hold so much. Others say, there's a very interesting reason given, is that what they would do on Christmas is that they would get up in the middle of the night to go to Mass. Even now you have midnight Mass, right? The real from Christians, they don't go early. It's like Slichas here, right? Like, you know, the light, some of us go to Central at 10 o'clock, and the hardcore Slichas is at midnight, right? So they do the easygoings already at 10 o'clock, they have a Mass. But the real ones, they only go to Mass at midnight. So all the non-Jews are heading to Mass at midnight. What are the Jews doing? Sleeping. It's not a good look. Hem holchim ve ana holchim. That's the whole thing. They go and we go. The famous line, they go to serve idol worship and we go to study Torah. And what are we doing whilst they're all going? We're all sleeping. So therefore they said, don't study in the first half of the evening. Why? Because the people who normally studied through the night, now they can't study. What will they do? They'll go to sleep. And then they'll wake up at midnight and study Torah. And then it'll be balanced. They'll be going to serve their idols and we'll be going to study Torah. So again, one thing is clear is this custom was passed down that you should not study on Nitzelnacht. Why? It's not clear. Again, probably the most obvious reason, it was a matter of safety. Heading out at night, for example, to go to the study hall. If you were to come to shul, the yeshiva, to go to a shiur, there was a danger of walking the streets. There was a danger of having candles lit in your house. What are you doing? So it was, you know, just you know, it's like lie low. And the truth is, this is true nowadays. I still remember... someone we know very well, he was telling me, how many of you soccer fans remember when England beat Germany 6-1? 5-1? 6-1? 5-1. Remember that game? Michael Owen scored a hat-trick many, many years ago, right? And there was one guy who was walking home and there was a bunch of crazy people and they were about to hit him and start up with him and he realized he had to get on their side. He's a long beard. So, hey, how good was that win? And they were, oh, yeah, you know? Like, we know when people are, when the hooligans are celebrating, stay away, right? I tell you right now, if England won the World Cup, now it'd be okay. But when I was growing up, if England World Cup, do you remember the hooliganism in England? Stay off the street. My parents would not have let me walk the streets if England won the World Cup. The amount of hooliganism. So comes a festival, stay home, don't study, don't go to the yeshiva. That would have been one reason. But it seems other reasons suggested. In fact, there is one sefer that says something very, very interesting. So let's remind ourselves of the reasons. Number one, it was just not safe to have a light lit or to walk the streets. Number two, it's a sign of mourning. Number three, if they're all going to church, we need some people to counterbalance it by studying. Another answer was given is that he was a student of Rabbi Yeshua ben Parachia. This Jesus was. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Parachia was one of these people who had you know, it was a great Talmud Chacham. And by not studying, we're sending the message that you can be one of the biggest studiers in the world. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says, learning is not the ikar, ela hama'aseh. Doing, action. So comes, here we have someone like Jesus. Jesus was a student of one of the greatest rabbis we ever had. You can imagine Jesus knew a fair bit of Torah. He knew all of it, but it never matched the action. So on Nitzolnach, we say, don't learn. Why? To show that you can learn all you want, but if you don't match it with action, then where does it lead you to? It can lead you to be the next Jesus. That's one thought. In Kabbalistic thought, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, for example, spoke about how you know how there's this idea that you have power on your birthday. So even though it's not really Jesus' birthday, the idea is we don't want to give any sort of positive spirit. So here we are learning Torah. It would be giving that positive energy towards Jesus' birthday that we shouldn't do. Again, all these different reasons.
That doesn't make logic as far as only part of the
knowledge. Correct, right? So, different mystical teachings. But, fascinatingly, the Vilna Gaon, who was from Lithuania, never agreed to this. And he said, you should be learning on Nitzolnacht. Other great rabbis said, don't tell me when Nitzolnacht is, because I don't want to be disturbed. And in fact, Sephardim, is there such a thing as Nitzolnacht? No. They all learned. Why? Well, and this is the part that proves, well, what were they worried about? Christianity wasn't an issue. They were living in Muslim lands. No one was worried about pogroms. No one was worried about Jesus. It didn't affect them, so they didn't have it. Okay, so in conclusion, we've looked at different customs. Practical law, we should avoid, we definitely shouldn't be buying trees, and we should be avoiding wishing people Merry Christmas if possible. We should be avoiding giving gifts if possible, at the very least on that day. We should be avoiding going to Christmas parties. Is there room for leniency in the following cases? Number one, when the people we're engaging with don't actually believe in Christmas, okay, versus they do, there would be a big difference. If a song, for example, is clearly about Jesus and Christian faith, it would be far more problematic than Mariah Carey, who, you know, made a song about the snow or whatever it was, and whatever particular song it was, that why it was written. You know, look at, and I'm not getting into the questions of non-Jewish music in general. That's a separate question. Some are very big believers that the composer of the song has a strong power. But I'm talking about just in general. If a song was written for the sake of Christianity, it would be more problematic than if it was just written for the culture. But again, avoiding, if possible, giving these gifts, definitely avoiding things like getting a job as a Santa or giving your kids to take pictures with the Santa or lights or any of those other things. Participating in it should be avoided as much as possible. But again, the leniency is if it's going to cause fights and it's going to cause an issue of peace with your neighbors, of how to be careful with all those things. And then, of course, the studying. So I think I've covered all the halachot of Christmas. We never spoke about the halachot of how tall the tree needs to be and all of that. Let me just